Numbers, The Key to the Universe, A Murderous Maths Book, read by Vanna Vance, by Sharton Poskett. Does the number 9 go to infinity? Yes, but it takes an eternity. Illustrated by Philip Reeve. Introduction, The Beginning of the End. The little moon juddered violently. From several million kilometers away, the voice came again. Turn it up just a teeny bit louder. Ready? Okay. Testing, 1, 2, testing. Of course, the moon couldn't actually hear the noise coming from the mother planet because sound doesn't travel through the vacuum of empty space. It was the disruption to the planet's gravitational field caused by the mountainous sound system that finally ripped the little moon to bits. That should do it. Okay, let the audience in. The greatest rock band in the universe were ready to give their very final last farewell concert. Nebulax were preparing to play to every life form that ever had or ever would exist. This caused several problems, the trickiest of which had been calculated in the seating capacity. Now, life forms are evolving all the time, said the promoter, Tessa Goldbars, tapping on her calculator. You could count them forever and still not get to the end. So how many punters are we expecting in total? Asked Shaq, her assistant. I make it infinity, said Tessa, checking the screen. So how many seats do we need? Infinity punters will need infinity seats, said Tessa, obviously. Now that's a lot of seats. But after the entire audience was settled, Shaq came dashing up to Tessa. We've got a problem. The singer's mother has just materialized. I never knew she had a mother, said Tessa. Well, she has, and she's refusing to go on until her mum has a seat. But we've already got all our infinity seats filled by infinity life forms, gasped Tessa. You can't have more seats than infinity. It was a tight situation. The crowd were getting restless, the band wouldn't play, tempers were hotting up, and things were about to turn very ugly. At times like that, there's only one thing to say. Hello, murderous maths fans, and welcome to another brain-bending book. Appeal to another grape, Almighty Poskett. If you want to solve Tessa's problem of trying to fit one more person onto infinity full seats, you'll need to get your head around numbers, which just happens to be the most amazing subject in the universe. Indeed, 1 plus 2 equals 3 is a truly amazing fact. Rubbish. If you want some amazing facts, King Henry VIII had 6 wives, the French word for cheese is fromage, and if a crab bites your toes, your foot will bleed a bit. Let's be fair here. Other subjects such as history, French, and biology are cute enough, but let's see what happens when we go off on a rocket to a distant galaxy. Henry VIII, fromage, crab toes, foot bleed. The aliens have absolutely no idea what these other subjects are about, and frankly, it's all a bit embarrassing. However, when they struggle to find some way of talking back, you might just hear, bleep, 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 bleep. 1 plus 2 makes 3. That's amazing! So even when you go to places where all other subjects are just petty and useless, you'll always find that numbers really are the key to the universe. A learning. Some people will find this book strange. It isn't about doing sums or fractions. It's full of stuff to make you go ooh and ah, and even the occasional, huh? Imagine answering the door to see yourself standing there. What noise would you make? But wibble, gibber, split, blip, eep. Well, you'll be making that noise quite a lot as you read this book. The mystery is that numbers seem so straightforward. You just start with 0 and keep adding 1, and see there's a nice big long line of them. There's just one little problem. Where do you stop? The answer is that you don't. Numbers go on forever, or, as we say in the maths trade, to infinity. We'll see more about infinity later in the book, but before we get there, let's have a quick look at the sort of numbers we'll meet on the way. Just like the queue for the showers in a nudist camp, they've got nothing to hide. Where have they? Here are a few of the freaks to start us off. There's a positive whole number that you can add to a million, and you get an answer that's bigger than if you multiply it by a million. Can you guess what it is? Here's a clue. It's the one that starts all the others. 19 equals 1 times 9 plus 1 plus 9, and 29 equals 2 times 9 plus 2 plus 9. This also works for 39, 39, 59, 69, 79, 89, and 99. Did you know that the number 6 is described as perfect? We'll find out why it's so gorgeous later on, and also why it encouraged people to spend thousands of years looking for the number 33,550,336. If you multiply 21,978 by 4, it turns backwards. That must be the most useless fact in maths. Oh no, it isn't. If you want a really useless fact, how about this? There are 12,988,816 different ways to cover a chessboard with 32 dominoes. Go on, give it a try. Get a chessboard and 32 dominoes. Each domino should cover 2 squares, or if you haven't got dominoes, you can cut some little paper rectangles out instead. Puff merit. Good grief, what a pathetically useless fact. Slap. So far we found 9,654,312 ways. This is fun. Yes, and isn't it brilliant? The good bit is that this book is so full of pathetically useless facts they'll even invited some judges in to dish out a few awards. Hello! As you go through the book, be sure to watch out for all the award-winning PUFs, as well as the runners-up, the merits, the distinctions, and so on. But aren't numbers on their own completely pointless? Very nearly, but don't let that put you off having a great time with them. After all, there are loads of people who think they are so clever because they can remember every football score for the last 20 years or the words to every pop song in the charts. But can they do floor magic tricks with the number 9? Who thinks up number facts? Anyone can have a go at finding newer and stranger number facts. The number Google, which is a 1 followed by 100 zeros, was invented by a 9-year-old, but the experts who spend their whole lives on the subject are called pure mathematicians, and we love them. I don't count. I love sums. Spling! These jolly souls spend years agonizing on the meaning of numbers and how they fit together, and often their studies are linked with big questions such as, why is the universe here, and so on. Even if they do have bits of toast stuck to their sleeves and birds nesting in their beards, most of them will happily admit that all their massive brain work is probably a total waste of time. A lot of them are even proud of it. Here's what the great G.H. Hardy had to say. I've never done anything useful. No discovery of mine has made, or is likely to make, directly or indirectly, for good or ill, the least difference to the amenity of the world. Poor old Godfrey. He would have been most upset to find that his studies in numbers eventually helped armies to develop mega, unbreakable code systems. Tasty chalks. Pants. Thanks. Other results from numbers help to explain how the universe started, how curved space works, and what the insides of atoms are like. Do you know what wormholes are? If you wanted to travel from our solar system to the nearest star, called Alpha Centauri, it would take nearly 3.5 years, even at the speed of light. But scientists now think there's a way of just stepping through a hole in space and getting there immediately. How do they find out about these wormholes? By studying numbers. The strange thing is that numbers on their own mean absolutely nothing. If somebody told you they had just seen 8, you'd have no idea what they were talking about. You can't eat numbers or sit on them or rush them down the plug hole, and yet the more we know about them, the more we realize that our existence relies on them. Who knows? Even some of our pathetically useless facts might turn out to be essential one day. You can chop a lump of cheese into a maximum of 93 bits with 8 straight cuts. Does that give an award? It sounds a bit interesting. And it could be useful if you invited 93 people to a picnic. You see, although this fact seems pathetically useless, it didn't quite qualify. However, if there's only one fact from this book that will stick in your mind forever, it will probably be this next one because it must be one of the most useless statements ever to come from a pure mathematician. In the English language, 4 is the only number that has the same number of letters as the number itself. Oh, I say, that's rather good. Polite claps. Fibonacci and the Fogsworth Manor Miracle. High in the attic, Auntie Crystal was stitching together a curious patchwork quilt. As the needle flashed in her bony fingers, she smiled, for she knew it wasn't just cloth she was piecing together. Elsewhere on the estate, the quilt was already working its magic. Down in the hall, Croak the butler was aghast. Are you really sure about this, madam? He wondered. Absolutely, beamed the Duchess. I want my guests to feel welcome when they come to the manor, and this picture of me in the hallway is just the thing. Croak stepped back and looked at the full-length portrait, which featured the Duchess coyly looking over her shoulder. What it didn't feature was any clothes. It'll give them a nice surprise when they open the front door, said the Duchess brightly. It'll surprise them, all right, mumbled Croak as he wondered what on earth had possessed her to record her posterior for posterity. A lot of work went into that painting, you know, said the Duchess. Not to mention a lot of pink paint, muttered Croak to himself. Mind you, said the Duchess, I can't help thinking it's a bit square. You mean square as an old-fashioned? Asked Croak, thinking of dusty old pictures in art galleries featuring big Italian ladies lying on couches instead of getting dressed. No, said the Duchess, it's 2 meters on each side. Pictures don't look quite right when they're square. I could always saw a bit off and make it narrower, said Croak. Brilliant, said the Duchess. Croak got a saw and laid the picture across the hall table. A few minutes later, he held it up. It's 2 meters high and 1 meter wide now, said Croak. Said the Duchess. Looks a bit too long and thin now. Maybe you should chop the bottom off. Good idea, agreed Croak. The picture would certainly look better without that bottom on it. Chop 1/2 meter off the bottom, said the Duchess. Oh, said Croak. In other words, you just want me to chop your feet off. That's it, said the Duchess. But then a few minutes later, it's better, but now it looks too wide again. Try taking another 10 centimeters off each side. As you wish, muttered Croak, reaching for his saw again. It was going to be a long afternoon. Meanwhile, Primrose Poppet had been in the garden looking for flower-leaf clovers. Tell me, she said, holding up one single little green clover to her face, you all seem to have just 3 leaves. Why is that? The little clover didn't say anything, which was very kind, because if it had said anything, it would have scared Primrose out of her tiny mind. Never mind, I'll find a flower with 4 petals instead. But after a while, she had remarked, how curious. The iris has 3 petals, the buttercup has 5, and as for this rose, you have 8 in the middle and 5 bigger ones round the outside, making 13 altogether. Why do you use such strange numbers? The clover nudged the rose, but they still said nothing because there are a few rules that plants have to obey. Sigh. One rule is that your leaves and seeds and petals all have to grow to a fixed mathematical pattern. It doesn't matter whether you're a flower, you're a clover, or even a pineapple or a fir cone. Another rule is that you don't talk to people because you'll scare them so much that their heads are likely to explode. Hey, Nonny Nonny No, sang Primrose as she put all the flowers in a basket. I think I'll stick you all in my collecting book and draw little fairies around you. How sweet you all look. The flowers still said nothing, but boy, it was tempting. Very tempting. Meanwhile, over by the carrot patch, the language was not quite as soppy. Blistering blast and bother, blurted the colonel. These confounded rabbits get everywhere. Sorry, old chap, said Rodney Bounder as he emerged from the potting shed. I just thought a rabbit farm might boost my fortunes a bit. A rabbit farm? Yes, rather a wizard wheeze of mine, actually, said Rodney. I'd got a bit slim in the wallet department, so I decided to get myself a couple of rabbits. A couple, moaned the colonel. There's hundreds of the things all eating my veggies. That's the clever bit, said Rodney, checking his notebook. Rabbits like to get things moving on the baby front, as it were, so I've been keeping track. In December, I just started with the one pair. And they produce lots of babies, I suppose, said the colonel. No, in fact, I was a bit worried at first, said Rodney. It seems these rabbits don't produce any babies in their first month, so I didn't get any in January. However, they produced a pair in the second month, which was February, then produced another new pair every month after that. And I suppose these new pairs of rabbits make more rabbits, said the colonel. Not for the first month, but then they do for every month after that, agreed Rodney. Here's my progress chart. First pair of rabbits. Pairs produced by first pair marked dot. Pairs produced by second pair marked X. December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Total new pairs in month, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 18, 30, 13, 21. Total pairs at end of each month, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55. It's quite simple, said Rodney. The blobs mark each new pair of rabbits. The first pair of rabbits are at the top. They produced a new pair from February onwards. The second pair of rabbits started producing new pairs from April. If you follow the lines, you can see how each pair produced more pairs. At the end of each month, I counted up the new pairs of rabbits and then added them to the total. For instance, at the end of May, I had 8 pairs. I got 5 new pairs in June, so at the end of June, I had 8 plus 5 equals 13 pairs in total. But how do you know the September number? Asked the colonel. We haven't got there yet, and besides, you haven't drawn it all in. I found a shortcut, said Rodney. To work out what I'll have at the end of any month, I just add up the totals for the 2 months before. If you look at July, I finished with 21 pairs in all, which is the total of May and June added together. How does that come about? Asked the colonel. Simple, said Rodney. Look at the end of June. You'll see I had 13 pairs. When I got to the end of July, I still had all those 13 pairs, plus however many new pairs were born in July, said Rodney. So how many babies were born in July? That's the clever bit, said Rodney. I knew that I would get a new pair of rabbits from every pair that was at least 2 months old. In other words, any pair that were around May would be producing in July. So the number of new pairs in July is the same as the May total, said the colonel, feeling rather clever. You've got it, said Rodney. So add the end of May total to the end of June total, and you get the end of July total. Does that work for every month? Asked the colonel suspiciously. It certainly does, said Rodney. What's more, I'm just about to calculate how many rabbits I'll have by the Christmas after next. All I do is add October and November together, said Rodney, and with a piece of chalk he scribbled on the potting shed wall, 28657 plus 46368 equals 75025. You mean you'll have 75,025 rabbits all eating my carrots? Guessed the colonel. No, said Rodney. Glad to hear it, said the colonel. Actually, it's 75,025 pairs of rabbits. The colonel was still steaming later that evening when the whole family were gathered in the library to admire the quilt. What an interesting pattern, Auntie, said Primrose. It's all squares getting bigger and bigger. I started with the two little squares in the middle, said Auntie Crystal. Then I added a bigger square to go along the side. Then I put an even bigger square along the next side, and so on. What do the numbers mean? Asked Rodney. That's how big the sides of each square are, chuckled Auntie Crystal. But surely these numbers are familiar to you? I see there's a square with number 3, noticed Primrose. Then there's a 5, an 8, and then a 13. Golly, it's like the petals on my flowers. Great guesses, exclaimed the colonel, and it's like those blasted rabbits. He only had one pair for a couple of months, then he had 2 pairs, then 3, then 5, then I had 8, then 13, gasped Rodney. It's amazing. Only the Duchess was silent. You're looking left out, dear, said Auntie Crystal. I haven't been doing any numbers today, admitted the Duchess, so your quilt can't have affected me. Arg, pressed flowers. What is that? How the quilt started. 1, 1, 2, 3, 5. But look at the shape of it, chuckled Auntie Crystal. You're right, gasped the Duchess. The shape of your quilt and my picture are almost identical. But how does the quilt work, they all asked. Here's your answer, said Auntie Crystal, and pointed to the sign stitched on the bottom of the quilt. The golden ratio and the perfect rectangle. This sign is called PH I, and is used to represent a very special number, which has been called the golden ratio, the golden section, and the divine proportion. E equals 1, 6, 1, 8, 0, 3, 3, 9, 8, 8, 7, 4, 9, 8, 9, 4, 8, 4, 8, 2, 0, 4, 5, 8, 6, 8, 3, 4, 3, 6, 5, 6. Phew, that would take a bit of remembering, but there's a formula for it. Try making on your calculator by pushing 5 plus 1 divided by 2. Pi has a couple of nifty little tricks. To square it, you just add 1 to get the reciprocal. In other words, to make it into a fraction, you just subtract 1. With numbers, it looks like this. Make pi on your calculator and then square it by just pushing times equals, or you can push the times 2 button if you have one. Did you see the difference? Your calculator has a 1 times button. You can also try making pi and then pushing 1 times. Sometimes you can just push divided by equals to get the same thing. But why is it called the golden ratio? For thousands of years, people have been making and drawing rectangles of all shapes and sizes, and ages ago they realized that there was a particular shape that they liked best. It wasn't too short and fat, and it wasn't too long and skinny. See which of these rectangles you'd pick as your favorite. Do you agree with our panel of experts? Of course, it's all a matter of personal taste, but generally they all agree that C was the perfect rectangle. You'll find that if you measure the long side and divide it by the short side, you get the golden ratio, phi. Incidentally, this book is almost the perfect shape, but it's just a bit too fat. This golden ratio turns up in other shapes, too. Pythagoras and his pals were very keen on the pentagram or five-pointed star. If you copied the line AX twice and also copied the line XB twice, you could put them together to make a perfect rectangle. You could make a bigger perfect rectangle using two ABs and two AXs. Here's the easy way to draw a perfect rectangle. 1. Draw a square. 2. Stick compass point exactly halfway along one side. 3. Open compass to reach this corner and draw an ARC. 4. Extend side to reach ARC. 5. Complete the rectangle. The big rectangle is a perfect rectangle, but if you chop off the square you started with, the small rectangle is also a perfect rectangle. You can even fold a perfect rectangle from a long strip of paper. 1. Fold so these edges meet. Make a crease and unfold. 2. Fold so that this corner touches bottom of the crease. Make a crease here, then unfold. 3. Fold long and over so the fold starts here and the edges touch here. Don't bother making a long crease along here. Make a little mark or small crease here. Finally, fold and unfold here. This crease is the edge of the rectangle, the little mark you made last time. All sorts of famous pictures and buildings use the perfect rectangle shape because it just looks right. Here's how the Parthenon at Athens would have looked when it was first built. It fits the perfect rectangle. Probably just a coincidence. If you're not convinced, then see how the Egyptians designed the Great Pyramid at Giza. Distance at the middle of one side equals 186.4 meters. Distance from edge to center equals 115.2 meters. If you divide the distance at the side by the distance from the edge to the center, you get 186.4 meters divided by 115.2 meters equals 1.618. Incidentally, the Egyptians didn't have meters, but it doesn't matter what you measure it in, you get the same answer. Even if you were feeling a bit nutty and measured it in miles, you'd get 0.1158 miles divided by 0.07159 miles equals 1.618. Just like thousands of artists and architects before her, when the Duchess was deciding on the perfect shape for her picture, she found herself gradually making a perfect rectangle. If she had measured the long side and divided it by the short side, she'd have got something near 1.618. But what have the rabbits got to do with it? The Fibonacci series. Leonardo Fibonacci was living in the Italian town of Pisa about 800 years ago when the famous straight-up Tower of Pisa was being built. As fate would have it, two curious things happened around the same time. The tower started leaning and Leonardo developed his famous series of numbers, which goes like this. Greek. 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, 100, 34, and so on. As we've seen with the rabbits, to get the next number in the series, you just add the last two numbers together. The numbers are also the sizes of the squares on Antichrist's quilt. But why should the quilt be the same shape as the Duchess's picture? The Fibonacci's series does lots of strange things, and one of them is that it conjures at the number 5, which you'll remember is about equal to 1.618. What we do is take two numbers next to each other in the series and divide the bigger one by the smaller one. We'll start at the beginning with the two ones and move along to see what we get. 1 equals 1, which is quite a lot less than 1.618. 2 slash 1 equals 2, which is a bit more than 1.618. 3 slash 2 equals 1.5, which is less than 1.618, but getting a bit closer. 5 slash 3 equals 1.667, which is more than 1.618, but getting even closer. 8 slash 5 equals 1.6, which is just a tiny bit less than 1.618. 13 slash 8 equals 100, 1.625, which isn't even teenier, but more than 1.618. 21/13 equals 1.615, which is a teeny weeny bit less than 1.618. 34/21 equals 1.619. Oh, come on. How close do you want it to be before you're convinced? To save time, we'll grab two of the biggest numbers off Rodney's rabbit chart and see how close they come to making 5. 4636.8/286.57 equals 1.618033988.2. Not bad, but that 2 should be a 7. The size of Anticristal's quilt are 55 and 34, so the ratio is 55/34, which is 1.61767. This makes it almost identical in shape to a perfect rectangle, which is what the Duchess had been creating. How plants count. This is where maths get really strange. If you count up the petals on a flower, in most cases you get a Fibonacci number. Roses are especially interesting because a wild rose has 5 petals, but a neat-looking normal rose has 5 petals around the outside and a tighter cluster of 8 petals in the middle. Occasionally you'll find buttercups with 6 petals, but that's because they started with 3 big petals, each of which divided into 2. Even daisies try their best and have either 55 or 89 petals, although to be fair, they sometimes lose count and have a few petals more or less. Of course, there are lots of plants that don't seem to obey the rules, but that's often because they are mutants or hybrids that have been created artificially, or plants that have been tampered with while they were growing. However, if you have a tall sunflower that's been in the same pot since it was a seed, check to see if all the leaves come off the stem at different heights. If they do, then you should find something interesting. Find a leaf low down and imagine tying a thread to it. Then imagine tying the thread to the next leaf above it, and then the next one and the next, working the thread around the stem the shortest way each time. If you count the bottom leaf as 0, then the fifth leaf you get 2 should be directly above it. You'll also find your thread goes around the stem 2 times. Now imagine linking the leaves with a second thread, but this time it goes around the stem in the opposite direction. You'll find it goes around the stem 3 times. Look at the numbers we've got, 2, 3, 5. These come next to each other in the Fibonacci series. Next time you're in a big garden or a park, see if you can spot any other plants that have a long stem with leaves coming off it. There are lots that produce leaves on a 1-1-2 system, but you might find a plant with a 2-3-5 or even a 3-5-8 system. In other words, if you start at a bottom leaf and count up, the eighth leaf you reach will be directly above your starting leaf. Something that's a bit harder to spot are spiral patterns. The seeds in the head of a sunflower are set in 2 patterns of spirals, usually 34 spirals going one way and 55 the other. A big sunflower might have 55 spirals one way and 89 the other. If you think that would be murderous to count, then what about little daisy heads? They're supposed to have a pattern of 21 spirals one way and 34 the other, but imagine Leonardo trying to count them. There are Fibonacci spiral patterns in the heads of lots.